One of the many changes that came with the pandemic was a big shift away from using cash. And you might not have been able to take your kids or grandchildren to the shops and teach them about money in that everyday way. School banking programs say that they deliver this kind of financial education, and they even pay the school for each student signed up. But you will be startled, I'm sure, to hear that there is a downside. If you had a bank account when you were at primary school, did you stick with that same bank as an adult? Tell us what kind of financial grounding you got, if any, at school age. Head to our Facebook page and drop your comment there. Scott Pape is with us today. He's a financial educator. You'll know him as the Barefoot Investor, but he's now a volunteer financial counsellor. Scott, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you.
Now, consumer advocacy group Choice and the Australian Education Union and you have been pushing to remove these banking programs from schools in recent years. How Yes. significant is this switch in Victoria?
Look, I think it's a huge step forward. Really for me, it's less about the bank bashing and banning banks from schools and more about a recognition that we really need to be equipping students with financial literacy and really building up their financial education. The one thing I think we all know is that it's the one exam, managing your money is the one exam that you're going to be tested on every day of your life. And the fact that too many Aussie kids graduate from high school having learned really nothing about financial education is really just not cutting the mustard in 2020.
Shouldn't they just be picking up from their parents though? I mean, how much can you squeeze into school?
Well, look, I agree with that, that you would actually, parents play a huge role. A couple of weeks ago, I sat down with a bunch of young people and asked them about their experiences with money. And the lovely thing for me, Hillary, being a father of three, is that kids still listen to their parents. They play a major role in teaching them values and behaviours, which are really the cornerstone, the building blocks of financial education. But my view is that schools should be a conduit to actually having those conversations with parents. It really needs to be that kids need to learn about these things in schools because they are life matters, really, to pardon the pun. what we've seen is that in the last, say, 20 or 30 years, financial education really hasn't gone anywhere in schools or, you know, in education. But the banks and financial institutions' ability to trap and target young people has become ever more sophisticated with A-B split testing, with emotional-based advertising. The way that they capture us to bank in their way is quite extraordinary. So my view is that to develop confident individuals, we really need to have a focus at this, and schools are the area that are the conduit for that.
So when you say A-B split testing, you're talking about the ways that banks parcel out our demographics so they're targeting their marketing to the right people.
Yeah, I mean, I think the banks have become some of the most sophisticated marketers on the planet, and the reason is because they make a damn lot of money out of it. So the bank's ability to market debt and their services has increased exponentially, but our ability to actually understand and understand that messaging and make good financial decisions for ourselves hasn't kept up. So one of the things that I find is that young people, leave school. They may not have learned anything about money. They may think that they're not very numbers. They're not numbers-based people. They make a number of bad decisions, getting a credit card or buying a car or those sorts of things. And when they're in their mid-20s, they come and see me and say, I'm no good with money, and now I have the credit card balance to prove it. And once that belief takes hold, it's really, really hard to change that perception of yourself, and that is the real danger that I see and the opportunity that we have as a society to help build the confidence of young people.
Some people might say, look, you know, where's the harm? The kid gets a plastic piggy bank and the school gets a few bucks. How is that damaging the child's relationship with banking?
Look, I think there's two points to that. The first one is that when the school banking program started, you know, 80 or 90 years ago, I think it was a decent idea. I mean, it was a state bank. It was owned by the government. It was encouraging savings. And in many cases, it was you meet the local bank manager. That's just not how we deal with things now. Money is very different in terms of how we interact with our banks. That's the first point that I would say things have evolved. And I don't like the corporatization of the classroom. The fact that institutions or financial institutions can pay their way to get into classrooms and sign up kids. Something about that sort of the analogy I always go back to, it's having a bank in schools teaching our kids about money is like having Ronald McDonald teach them about financial nutrition. This should be education. And to me, the real point is if a school has school banking, oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes they say, right, financial education, tick, we've done that, we've got the CommBank in. For me, I think that this is a recognition and an opportunity to say, hey, we really need to equip our kids with one of the most important life skills. It's you know, this is really important, far too important to leave it to a bank or banks that may have differing motivations than a teacher or the school who are really solely about building that young person's confidence and intelligence.
We're speaking with Scott Pape, financial educator, Barefoot Investor, and we're wondering what you think too about how much the school banking programs you might have experienced were a sticky factor for you. Did they weld you onto a particular bank? You can head to our Facebook page and tell us your thoughts there. And we're joined too by Catherine Attard. She's Associate Professor of Mathematics Education at Western Sydney University. Catherine, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, ASIC said in 2019 that there was little evidence that programs delivered by banks taught children financial literacy. Mm-hmm. So why do so many schools have them?
Look, I think with a lot of schools, it's just force of habit. It's also pressure from the parental community because, you know, if you experienced school banking when you were at school, it's something that you want your children to experience. But more and more, I think schools are actually waking up to the fact that school banking is a bit of a distraction, actually, more than anything else. It doesn't really educate students with financial literacy. It just distracts kids from the core the core goal of schools, and that's to educate.
And how do you do that in a school setting? I guess let's start with how it has been done. What kind of shape has financial literacy taken in the past in state schools?
Well, traditionally, financial literacy has been embedded into curriculum areas, particularly mathematics. So if you look at the maths curriculum from, you know, kindergarten all the way through to year 12, you'll find traces of financial literacy. The thing is, it's not named as financial literacy. It's typically named financial mathematics. So from kindergarten, for example, we're teaching children to recognise currency, you know, to understand the value of coins, etc. And then as children get older, they start to learn about budgeting and things like that. And then in the secondary school, they look at interest rates, you know, all that sort of thing, compound interest, those sorts of things. But you know, in reality, we can actually embed financial literacy in lots of the day-to-day activities that happen in schools. You know, so for example, if children are planning a class party or an excursion, you know, that's a really nice way to introduce financial literacy and to model good financial literacy for students.
Do you still need to look at coins and cash? I mean, are they relevant these days?
Look, I think they're extremely relevant. I understand that, you know, money is really, well, currency is really invisible these days. But the way that children learn is that they need to start with concrete examples first before they go to the abstract. And so currency is a concrete representation of what money actually is. If children don't get that, if they don't understand that money actually represents something, it's just not this invisible concept, then it's really hard for them to learn to value money and value what it can do. I mean, you know, you're trying to teach them about something that's invisible.
Exactly. Well, and I understand too, Catherine, that you're a fan not only of teaching the numbers, the nuts and bolts, but also a kind of critical thinking around money.
Absolutely. And if you think about financial literacy, it's not just about being able to balance a bank account. It's more about understanding what is the best value for money. You know, what are the things that I need and I want? And all of those concepts require critical thinking. So it's more about consumer literacy. It's not just financial literacy. How can I be a smart consumer? You know, when you think about teenagers having to decide on mobile phone plans, you need a lot of critical skills to be able to understand what you need, first of all, and then what plan best suits your individual needs.
And do we need to look at financial literacy for teachers as well? I mean, algebra is one thing, but compound interest might be another.
Absolutely. So, you know, I've worked with teachers in studies on financial literacy where the teachers have said to me, you know, I'm not good with money. I can't save. My parents didn't teach me how to save. So we can't assume that teachers have sound financial literacy, which means we actually have to educate the teachers in order to educate the students. You know, and that's a problem with, you know, those sorts of schemes where banks come in and they do a little presentation for kids and then they walk out and then we've ticked financial literacy. It doesn't work. What we have to do is build capacity with the teachers in our schools so that there's ongoing sustainable change with the students.
And Scott Pape was talking earlier about some of the things he sees coming through financial counselling later in life. And Catherine, I understand that you're involved in a program improving financial literacy for tertiary students, many of whom would have been through a school banking program in their primary years. What kind of knowledge do those older young people have about their finances?
Well, we've found that they actually don't have a lot of knowledge. You know, there's a great need there with university students because you know, they've found, like, once you leave school, you've got time on your hands, so you need to get a job to support yourself. And these students don't know how to manage their HECS fees, for example. They don't know how to manage getting a personal loan or a loan for a car. Often university students aren't straight out of school either, so we get people who are just changing their career trajectory, and so they've all of a sudden gone from full-time employment to part-time or casual employment so that they can study. So there's a great need. You know, even though they've been to school, they've had 12 or 13 years of schooling, there's a great need for financial literacy education all the way through, from the early years right through to adulthood.
And Scott Pape, when you're looking at the early years as a financial educator, what are the building blocks that you would like to see included in a curriculum based around building financial literacy? Where do you start?
Look, I mean, I think we all know people who are very, very intelligent, but they make kind of dumb decisions with money oftentimes. So my view is that it comes back to values and behaviours, right? So that idea that I like to spend, I don't want to be a tightwad, I'm very good at spending and looking at what is the best deal. I like to save up for things, delay my gratification, work hard towards a goal, and I like to give because we know that giving is a character trait or a value that builds a lot of resilience and happiness. So for me, at that primary school level, it's actually teaching. I have the three jam jars that I get that I try and teach kids to use and using money, just picking up with what Catherine said. Kids are visual creatures. You need to have that money there, even if you do want to sanitize it so it's clean. But just seeing that money, you know, hearing it go into a glass jar that they can see, and it's that link of the harder I work, the more money goes in that jar. I got to tell you, Hillary, I meet up with 35-year-olds that haven't made that link. So just that behaviour of I work hard, it's okay to spend. It's good to spend wisely. It's great to save up to something and it's great to give. I think they are the building blocks that financial education and financial confidence is built on. But I also think when I go in and talk to schools, talk to kids in schools, I actually get them to go home and teach their parents about pocket money. That way, you know, it's just that whole idea that you really get to know a subject if you can actually teach somebody else, in this case, your parents. And my hope is that it fosters a discussion between parents and kids about the role of money. And one of the interesting things that I found is that a lot of my clients, being a financial counsellor, they may be single parents, they may be on Centrelink. But what I've found is some of the best money managers are people on very low incomes because they have to be. They have to be good money managers. And that can be a source of pride rather than a source of tension for a lot of parents.
Yes, indeed. I remember chatting to Rick Morton on this program recently about his new little book on money. And he was saying, you know, you're always running the numbers. You've got very complex calculations in your head at all times. Very tiring, but a great read on that. And Catherine Attard, I know too that you've done work on this. Families talking about money in very different ways. So some people don't talk about it at all. Some people cover the basics and some are looking at really complex concepts. How do you create lessons that encompass all of those different experiences of wealth and money?
Well, in terms of creating lessons, I think what's important is that teachers actually start with their local context and what's important to the students in their classroom. And so what I've found is that, for example, children in rural, regional, remote areas need different financial literacy to children who live in metropolitan areas because their parents talk about very different things. So an example is I worked with a school in Deniliquin, and a lot of the children there came from farming families that had experienced drought and real hardship. And so those families were able to talk to their children about, you know, needing to work hard to pay the mortgage because, you know, if we didn't get rain, for example, it would impact them as well. So it teachers in those schools need to work with what's important to the students in their classroom, and they need to develop lessons. And it's not hard. I mean, it's really, as I said before, about educating teachers to be aware of those opportunities where we can actually use financial literacy. And it's a great way of addressing the curriculum. So, you know, you can teach a lot of mathematics through financial literacy and it makes it real. I mean, all students are interested in money. It's something that they all know about. So, you know, when you start talking about money in the maths lessons, all of a sudden everybody's listening. So it's not difficult to plan lessons. It's just about making sure that the students are engaged and it's really relevant to them in their lives today, but also relevant to their families.
I just wondered, when we're looking at financial literacy programs, there's Money Smart, isn't there? It's an independent government initiative. Why hasn't that been hoovered up by schools?
Look, I think schools do take it up to some degree, but one of the issues is that it's not contextualised. You know, it's not meant for every individual school. Every single classroom in a school is unique in terms of the needs. And so when you have something that's pre-prepared, it's a little bit generic and it doesn't always hit the mark with students. So, you know, I'm all for you know, Money Smart providing activities and resources and things like that, but individual teachers need to adjust those resources to suit their own needs. And, you know, I think what we need to do as well is make sure that financial literacy is more visible in our curriculum. So, you know, we're going up a few levels here to the, you know, Australian curriculum, but it really needs to be made more visible so that teachers are really aware that they must address it. And it's not an added burden. It's something that's already there that they can use because it's already there in the curriculum.
And Catherine, just to finish up with, do you expect change in other states and territories now that we're seeing Victoria axe these school banking programs?
Look, I suspect there will be change, and I certainly hope that there is change because it's time. It's time, particularly, you know, this year with all of the challenges of COVID-19 and all the financial challenge that's brought, it's really critical that we start to do something about this. It's really highlighted the importance of financial literacy because of the hardship that people are experiencing as a result of COVID-19.
Yep, and as I sit here in Victoria, bleaching my money as recommended by you, Scott Pape, what are your thoughts? Would you like to see this this ban rolled out across the nation?
I would hope so, but I also echo Catherine's thoughts, just that I hope this is the time where the education system says this is a really important life skill. It is, again, the one exam that every one of our students is going to be tested on every day of their lives, and a passing or failing grade can colour their entire life. So my hope is that we come out of this and say, we're going to make this part of the curriculum and we're going to deliver really practical lessons so that we lift kids' confidence so they do make those really powerful decisions when they're in those early 20s when the banks are all targeting them.
Exactly. It's a social issue too. Everyone wins if everyone's got better financial literacy. Thanks so much, Scott Pape and Catherine Attard, for joining us on Life Matters today.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Scott Pape, barefoot investor and now a volunteer financial counsellor, and Catherine Attard, Associate Professor of Mathematics Education at Western Sydney University.